This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What's happening? Tiki and Tierney ready to go. Coming to you from our Rocket Mortgage studio. Rocket Mortgage giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today. Just go to rocketmortgagesquares.com. What's happening? Hope everybody's having a great Thursday around the country. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. So, Tink, we were right in our prediction yesterday as we started the show. We said it kind of felt like a newsy day, reading the tea leaves. And, of course, the Brooklyn Nets pounced on James Harden. We'll get back to that a little later because now there's reports that Kyrie Irving is furious at the Nets. We'll hit that coming up in about an hour or so, 4 Eastern. But it seems like today could be another newsy type of day because Urban Meyer apparently, reportedly, on the brink of inking a deal, roughly around $12 million, to just kind of dot and I's, crossing T's, to take over the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, this is good for Urban Meyer. I think it's good for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's horrible for the Rooney Rule because apparently they've been working on this for a month now. And obviously they haven't been able to interview or shouldn't have been able to interview anyone before that. Look, this isn't a knock on Urban Meyer, but it's just this frustration with this process that goes on every year. We talk about it every single year, and nothing ever changes. And, you know, I know it's frustrating for guys like Eric Bieniemy who have been waiting for a real opportunity for a couple of years now, and who knows if it actually comes. You know, but it's just the first thing that jumps to my mind when I think about these coaches who are getting hired without, you know, without any proof that they're going to be successful. You know, Eric Bieniemy's put in a lot of work to be the guy in Kansas City. He's the offensive coordinator, won a Super Bowl last season. Mm-hmm. And there's always an excuse, whether it's, you know, he didn't interview well, which is nonsense. We heard Tony Dungy talk about that yesterday. Or he won't be able to build a staff. Or, you know, look at Andy Reid's assistants. They haven't done well, which is the most asinine narrative I've ever heard in my life, considering that three of them have won Super Bowls, including John Harbaugh and Doug Peterson most recently. And so, you know, it is what it is, and it's frustrating, but, you know, good luck, Urban Meyer.
Well, listen,
good luck.
I think this is amazing. I mean, I think Urban Meyer's, this could be, and I really thought about this, I'm not sure, provided this happens, and it looks like it will, provided they draft Trevor Lawrence, it looks like they will, I'm not sure an NFL team's ever made such a splash pertaining to two of the three most important positions within a team, the other being the GM. You're about to hire one of the most decorated head coaches, certainly of our generation. You can make the case of all time. Not as many titles as a few individuals. We get that. Understood.
Not in the NFL, though, dude.
No, I understand that. I got you. But, you know, you look at what he did at Florida with two championships, Ohio State, Alex Smith, former number one overall pick out of Utah. I mean, the guy's a coaching legend.
Saban's still the best ever.
No, I know. That's why I say one. No, that's I'm saying one of the most decorated. I'm not saying he's the most decorated.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's context there. But it's undeniable but that Urban Meyer is a borderline magician. And then you factor in that they're, you know, about to draft one of the most decorated quarterback prospects of all time. And then you throw in the fact that Jacksonville's, what, 80 miles-ish north of Gainesville. To me, I mean, this is a home run, man. I don't know if there's a more perfect fit. I understand he's got to assemble the staff. I got you. He's got to prove that his coaching chops translate from Saturday to Sunday. Fair. But when you look at the big picture and you look at, you know, oh, and by the way, Urban Meyer doing TV this past year, And the incredible, they've got 11 picks in this draft. And, you know, we keep referencing the two first round picks, the other coming from the Ramsey trade. They've got 2 second round picks, one of which comes from the Ngakoue trade with the Vikings. So they got 2 first, they got 2 and a second, 11 in totality. And you're going to draft Trevor Lawrence. You already have a shell of a few decent receivers and a terrific running back. I mean, the buzz for the Jaguars should be through the roof.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I mean, if they do things right, and I wonder, you know, what the staff will look like. Obviously, there's some, you know, inklings that Charlie Strong might come with him. Obviously, he was with him at Florida and been a head coach on college football for multiple teams. And so, like, I think him building a staff, and we talked about this a week ago, maybe even 2 weeks ago, is not going to be hard for Urban Meyer.
No.
Guys, players are not players, but, you know, former coaches, either they coach with him or guys that are just hanging around looking for the next step will certainly want to come join what he brings, because he's such a really good leader of men. And you're right, D. This Jacksonville team could get really good quickly if Trevor Lawrence turns out to be the can't-miss prospect that everybody talks about. Now, we know that there is no such thing as a can't-miss prospect, but, I mean, Trevor Lawrence looks like he has all the skills, the size, the arm strength, the acumen, the X's and O's, all that stuff seems to line up. And, I mean, you're right about the proximity to where he was a star in college. Now, the only thing to worry about, think about, is that he left Florida in burning garbage. Like, you know, it was headed into in a bad spot. And it took them a few years to get themselves turned back around. It wasn't that long, but it was ugly when he left, and he left kind of, I don't know, like
hastily,
very hastily is the best way to put it. Yeah. Like, oh, I got some health issues. I'm out. See y'all.
Left the Buckeyes in a pretty good shape, though.
Well, he did. And, you know, the Buckeye departure was, I mean, yes, it was his fault. And you obviously we're talking about the domestic event of issue with one of his coaches, and, you know, whether or not he was culpable in that. But then he had the health issue. It was convenient, but it was not dirty like it felt like it was in Florida. And so all of those things hang over him. But once you get into the NFL, it's a different calculus when you're talking about evaluating, you know, morality of head coaches, because it's win or loss. That's all that matters in the NFL.
Yeah, they just voted too the other, I guess it was Tuesday, they voted on a new stadium right next to the grounds of the current stadium. It didn't go through. Surprised about that. I mean,
is that right?
Yeah, I was reading that a little bit before the show, where I don't know if there's recourse to that. I mean, quite frankly, it was kind of a surface article, because I was, quite frankly, more interested in Urban Meyer and you know, exactly what's going on with the team. But, I mean, can you imagine, like, if you're voting on that in a month and a half or 2 months, and you got Urban Meyer and you got Trevor Lawrence and they're in tow, and season tickets sales are just, you know, flying off the counter.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and by the way, you know, as much as we reference their draft equity, they've got $75 million in cap space. And if you're an NFL player and there's a bevy of receivers, and we know who they are, and there's, you know, there's talent around the NFL right now that could shake free. And everybody knows Urban Meyer. And as I said a few times on the show, you're either, you know, good enough to be recruited by Urban, and you know who he is, at least on a cursory level, because there was some sort of an interaction, whether it was a you know, full press for the recruit, or, you know, some conversations, or you wished you were good enough to be recruited by Urban Meyer, and there's a different emotion that goes with that. Listen, I'm going to say this again, and D-Cell Santer, by all means, somebody chime in, because when you think about the highly coveted first overall pick quarterbacks who've come through, even going back to, you know, Vinny Testaverde with the Tampa Bay Bucks, obviously Peyton Manning, obviously Andrew Luck, and of course this will be Trevor Lawrence. When you look at their situations, their coaches weren't high profile. I'm not saying that they were inept, but they certainly didn't pack this tandem punch. You, again, are on the precipice of hiring one of the most decorated coaches of our lifetime and one of the most decorated quarterbacks coming out ever.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a rare combination.
It is very rare, but you got to be cautious because he's a great college coach and Trevor Lawrence was a great college quarterback.
I hear you.
I believe that they'll be I think he'll be okay in no matter what happens. I'm talking about Urban Meyer. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be great in the NFL. I'm talking about Urban Meyer. I think he's going to be an okay coach even if his methodologies don't work, because I'll go back to this and I keep going back to this. He's going to hire a good staff. It's so much of what matters for being a head coach in the NFL is having the support system around you. But the other thing that makes it, I think, so much easier is that it's Jacksonville. You know, it's not like he's coming to New York where there's going to be media pressure and
or Philly, you
know, or Philly or
Chicago
or Chicago or Detroit, where if you have, I mean, half of a bad season, forget like a full season or two, they're calling for your exodus, man. Like, get this dude out of here. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. And Jacksonville, look what Doug Maroon got, you know, down there, right? It seems like he's going to get time to figure out how to win on the NFL level, even if his early, you know, couple of years aren't uber successful. And I think a lot of teams probably were interested in Urban Meyer. I wouldn't be surprised.
The Chargers.
The Chargers as well. But the Chargers are more like the Jaguars than they are like, especially with the, you know,
Rams presence.
Not even that. Like, their lack of a fan. I don't even know what to call their fan base because it's not really
a transitional fan base.
Yeah,
how about that?
It's a good blossoming fan base. That's a good one. It's transitioning. Let's hope it's blossoming. It's transitioning because they don't have a coach right now. Mm-hmm. But I think the Los Angeles Chargers are more like the Jaguars, where he's going to get some time without the intense, like, fan and media pressure at some of these other places. So
I agree.
If I'm Urban Meyer and I've retired because of health reasons and gone to the booth the studio, you should say, because he didn't do games, but the studio to be an analyst, and I needed and I started to get that itch and I wanted to come back, I'm going to a low pressure place that has all of the other pieces in line. Draft equity, Trevor Lawrence, etc., and you know, a couple hundred miles away from where I won two national championships.
He's no dummy. Meyer is a brilliant tactician in terms of playing chess and setting himself up for his next move. And here's the other thing too: now this could change. You never know. But you look at the state of the AFC South. Ryan Tannehill's certainly had this nice renaissance and is good.
Yep.
But you know, nobody you fear. Deshaun Watson's great. He's a top five quarterback, but who knows if he's even there in a couple of years.
Yeah, and that's dysfunction. That's the height of dysfunction right now.
As we've chronicled many times on the show, and obviously you look at the situation with the Colts. I mean, I read today they're going to sit down in about a month or so and see where Phillip Rivers is at. You have Jacoby Brissett. I mean, you could always make a trade, I guess, but it looks like Carson Wentz is going to stay in Philly, and there was a thought that maybe Philly, if they were inclined to trade Wentz, you could trade him to the Colts to realign him with Frank Reich. Point is that you're going into a division that's not very strong at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, you're right.
The only thing I don't like about this, and if you remember to some of the first shows that we did here on CBS Sports Radio, going back to 2013, January 2nd was our first show. Mm-hmm. And one of the themes, because I just come from San Francisco, Trent Baalke's, that's a name we haven't heard in a while.
That's right.
But it's a name you're starting to hear at the Jaguars, because very quietly he's been, I guess, rehabbing his image in relative obscurity with the Jaguars. And there's a thought that he's going to ascend to the GM role. Now, let's not get this twisted.
Yeah.
There is no way that Urban Meyer's rolling in making $12 million a season. And he's going to say, Trent Baalke's going to say, you know what, coach, I disagree. We have to take this safety in the second round. You're wrong.
Let me back up for a second, BT. For a minute.
But I still don't know if I love Trent Baalke being a GM is my point.
Before you talk about his rehab, the issue with Jim Harbaugh and Trent Baalke was what exactly?
A power struggle.
About personnel? Personnel?
Yes, personnel and also personality.
Okay.
And Trent Baalke was aligned more closely with Jed York than Jim Harbaugh, who's not. Listen, I would never frame it like Trent Baalke was walking around kissing Jed York's behind. I would never disrespect him that way. Even though we had some battles on the radio, the guy, you know, they won. They were pretty good with the Baalke and Harbaugh duo. But Jim Harbaugh is the kind of guy where if he's not feeling you from a personality point of view, he's not going to go to pursue a smoother relationship. And I think that was used as a strategic asset.
I see.
By Trent Baalke.
I see.
Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
And so the reason I asked that question is because is Urban Meyer any less ornery than Jim Harbaugh? You know what I mean? Than Jim Harbaugh? And I would, it's hard to like figure that one.
The answer is I'm not sure, but yeah. I do know that Trent Baalke's power has been greatly diminished.
Of course.
And while
because he's been out of the game for what, 4 years, 3 years?
Certainly
now?
At that position, he's been out of the game more than that as a GM. But from a, in terms of wielding the power stick, yes, Jim Harbaugh was coming from Stanford, doing a good job, blah, blah, blah. Urban Meyer is walking in with different juice, in my opinion. Different cachet. And Harbaugh had some great battles, beat Pete Carroll at Stanford when that USC team was loaded. I mean, Jim did a great job in Palo Alto, but Urban Meyer's collegiate resume dwarfs.
Yeah.
And dwarfs or dwarfed, if you want to take it back to the past tense, what Jim Harbaugh was walking in the door with. So Urban's in charge, $12 million a year, if that report is right. That's the only thing about this equation that I don't love, because I don't love Trent Baalke as a GM. But I do think that that's minimized by the understanding, either contractually, fundamentally, personality-wise, or all three, that Trent Baalke's riding shotgun, if not in the back seat. Urban's got the wheel.
Yeah, and by the way, even if doesn't matter if Trent Baalke or, I don't know, you or the GM of the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know who they're taking number one overall. It's Trevor Lawrence.
For sure, no doubt.
So you can't mess that one. You can't mess up your first draft. Whoever becomes the general manager.
Can you imagine if he just flipped the script? And again, he's not going to take Justin Fields. Could you just imagine?
Yeah.
Well, listen, this is
Trey
this
Lance. Is,
yeah, right? Exactly. Hey, you know what? Forget it. That's true. Let's take Trey. That is Zach Wilson, the first overall pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I also think Shad Khan's a different presence than Jed York.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, just to kind of put the bow on that. We'll see. I think it's going to work out very well. I think that Urban, it was very important that he humanized himself on TV this year. And I also said when this first started to float that it was a possibility with the Jags. I remember saying on the show that I think that just being in a studio with former NFL guys, listen, Leinart wasn't a good pro, but he's still pro, top 10 pick, whatever it was, 11, 10, or whatever he got drafted. Reggie Bush, like, you're having off-camera conversations about the league. And to me, Urban Meyer is smart enough to modernize and adapt and tweak what he needs to tweak to be a king from Saturday and, you know, a winner on Sunday. I think this will be a home run. That's what I'm saying today. I've got to change my tune a couple of years in. I will. But this just strikes me as a monster move by the Jags. I love it.
Maybe it happens at some point today. It seems like it is, though.
Yes, moving in that direction. All right, coming up next here. Is there an undercurrent of what's the word? Not a revolt, a lack of support. What's going on with Tua in Miami? Not so much from the organization, but players not necessarily buying into Tua. And if that's true, should that persuade the Dolphins to, if they're not inclined to take a quarterback at three, could that alter their strategy moving forward? We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, what's happening? Hopefully everybody's doing well. Inbounds, Out of Bounds coming up next, a daily staple on the show. And on the menu, could snow derail Lamar Jackson up in Buffalo this weekend? Weather's going to be an issue. What's it going to mean for Lamar and the game plan for the Ravens? If anything, we'll get to that coming up. Also, Kyrie Irving reportedly furious with Nets management. Not about James Harden. This stems from other stuff, and we'll get to that coming up at 4 Eastern. So we've got a lot to hit. We'll obviously follow the Urban Meyer stuff. It looks like this thing's seemingly at about the 2-yard line, maybe the one, you know, maybe the half inch line when you start getting, you know, financial parameters per year as we have, if those reports are true, roughly $12 million. But anyway, let's get to Tua Tagovailoa. Now, this was actually newsworthy yesterday. We were so jammed, and we just didn't get a chance to squeeze it in. But it's a really – it's – boy, it makes you think. And quite frankly, it only further emboldens me. Not that I don't like Tua, I do. But I don't know if I like him enough not to draft the quarterback at three if I am absolutely in love with whomever is still there. And obviously, everybody's going to be there after Trevor Lawrence. But when the report comes out, Teague, not forget about management, when the report comes out that anonymous players are saying, this was in the Miami Herald, that in essence, they don't know if they really believe in Tua and that Fitzpatrick's better, he should have been playing. That's a terrible look. And that is that makes you think.
Yeah, well, there's
makes
this
me think.
Well, this is complicated in so many ways. Tua is, I mean, he started playing 11 months after he had a severely damaged hip and a serious injury that a lot of people were concerned it was going to ruin his career. Ultimately, that would prove to be false, you know, speculation about his career. But, I mean, it wasn't even a year before he was playing football again. And so that's one thing. And I bring that up because if you watch Tua, just go back and find the easy highlights from the national championship game where he took over for Jalen Hurts and threw that bomb to Devontae Smith. If you watch his mechanics, they're so sound, and he looks strong, and he pushes off his left hip, which is the one he dislocated, and throws this deep ball, and it's beautiful. And he was dominant. I saw him play multiple times live down in Alabama, and I was like, man, this kid's going to be a star, especially because of how athletic he felt. Not like, you know, Lamar Jackson athletic, but just you're not going to, you know, chase him down and disrupt him if you put pressure on him in the pocket. The second thing you have to look at is who his offensive coordinator was this past season, and that's Chan Gailey. Now, Chan Gailey he's interesting, but he's nothing to write home about as far as offensive coordinating is concerned. And this is the second offensive coordinator to be shown the door by Brian Flores. Chad O'Shea was the first offensive coordinator last year. It was too complicated for a young team. They got rid of him. They bring in Chan Gailey, probably just as a stopgap, who's decent offensive coordinator. But think about Tua and what Tua did under Steve Sarkisian's system down at Alabama. It was a lot of, you know, motions to create matchups and, you know, putting him in easy positions to make plays. And yeah. Chan Gailey's just not that. And so there's a reason that he resigned at the end of the season, so he didn't have to be fired. I think they got to find, one, the right coordinator for Tua, and two, he's got to be fully healthy. If those two things don't exist, then yeah, maybe Tua isn't the right guy.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I've learned to trust is the opinions of guys who play, and either played or play, especially guys who play with somebody, and then they, even if it's anonymous, which I know drives you nuts, and me too.
Yeah,
I love somebody to put their name to this, which obviously they're not going to. It would be to their detriment, but this gave me great pause. And again, this is coming from somebody who is on the record multiple times on the show. You know, I'm open for business at number three. I could go a variety of ways if I'm running the Miami Dolphins. That's myself. You know, and the reason I've been saying that, even, you know, way before this report came out in the Herald with what was that, Armando Salguero had that, right?
And again,
he's working back from injury, offensive coordinator, I got you. I haven't seen anything dynamic. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't at some point. I'm not necessarily expecting to see this dynamic burst, but I do know this. I saw it right away from Herbert. I saw it right away from Joe Burrow. Going back a couple of years when Baker Mayfield came off the bench after Tyrod Taylor played his first couple of games, right away. First of all, Baker set a rookie touchdown record with 27. Right away, you saw a dynamic element. I know Josh Allen's completion percentage was horrendous, but you're like, this guy can throw the ball through a barn. He's big. He's fast. Lamar Jackson immediately changed the culture and the perception with the Ravens. Even Sam Darnold, who's been a mess for a lot of reasons, but he's been a mess. I mean, I've seen him truck, you know, linebackers after running 40, 50 yards to the house. It's on YouTube. Look it up. So I what I see with Tua is a lot of checkdowns. That's all I see.
Yeah.
I don't see anything that's like, wow, that guy, that young man is the real deal.
I think you got to be careful, though, comparing him to Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow, because those guys – were given reins to just do what they felt comfortable doing.
And maybe their talent allowed them to get that rope.
It's hard for me to evaluate talent after a season, BT. It really is. I like Tua, mm-hmm. and so I'm more giving him the benefit of the doubt because I know his work ethic, and maybe he needs this type of doubt to motivate him to be a better player. But let's also not absolve Brian Flores, their head coach, who has been exceptional in his first couple of years down at Miami, for flip-flopping his quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't mind it in real time because you're trying to win your division. And they mm-hmm. were for a couple games there. Before the end of the year.
If they would have won the last week, they're in.
Right. I'm talking about the division. They were tight. Were tight with the Bills for a lot of the year. Max, they got two games behind them, but for most of it, they were a game behind the Bills. And mm-hmm. so if you're in a close game and Tua's, let's not forget, he won six games. You're in close games with Tua, and it's coming down to it, and he's starting to get flustered. I don't mind, putting Ryan Fitzpatrick in there and finding a way to win a football game because you're trying to win the division.
Yeah.
And then make the postseason.
I didn't have an issue with that.
The thing that happens, though, when you do that is that you inadvertently stunt the young man's growth, right? Because he never learns how to push through that adversity and get better by pushing through that adversity. So this offseason it's an important one. I think that Chris Greer, their general manager, has stated and will continue to state Tua's our guy. I don't think that they'll draft another quarterback in the top five this year because that would just feel like a waste of resources. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you move away from someone.
What if you trade out and you take a shot on Trey Lance? What if you trade down to 12? Would that change the way you feel?
But you're trading one project for another. Be honest with you, the only guy who I think can come in and play right away in this draft is Trevor Lawrence. I'm not sold that Justin Fields is going to be great his rookie season.
No, I think Wilson could play right away. That's me.
Wilson probably.
I really do.
Maybe I got to see him play in the preseason. Let me see a couple of games with you throwing in tight windows as opposed to wide open wide receivers. Same thing with Trey Lance as well. I mean, I got to see those guys because I just don't have an appreciation. But I worry that if you're the Dolphins and you're, listening to the locker room, so to speak, to make your decisions, then you're setting yourself up for failure after two really good years of growth. Growth mm-hmm. under Brian Flores after, three or four years of whatever it was under Adam Gase.
Unless that lack of belief can prove to from players can prove to be a vehicle to end your stubbornness. And what I mean by that is,
I don't even know what that means.
I'm going to explain it to you. It's simple, but it's common sense, but it's the human mind, right? So you draft somebody, mm-hmm. you're going to get their back. You're going to stick with them. Because if you move on, you look like you drafted the wrong person. So obviously, Miami, and I'm not saying I don't believe Greer. I'm not saying that. But Miami is motivated to make this work with Tua for a multitude of reasons. You drafted him very highly. I got it. But those noises, internal noises, your people might just prove to be the impetus. I'm just saying theoretically, maybe, mm-hmm. might prove to be the impetus for you to look in the mirror and say, man, like deep down, I don't know if we drafted the right person, and what these guys are saying, they're not wrong. And it could motivate them to do something that's very hard to do.
Yeah.
And that's acknowledge a mistake that high in the draft. That's all I'm saying.
I don't see it happening.
I don't know either, but I'm saying it's possible.
I don't see it happening, and nor do I think it would be smart to do that. Okay. I can understand why this is a story, but I don't see it happening, and I don't think it's very prudent if you're the Miami Dolphins.
I gotcha. It's certainly a story that will follow. We see it a little differently. I'm not saying draft them definitely. I'm saying
yep.
I'm still evaluating.
The most important thing for the Dolphins to do right now is find a competent offensive coordinator.
Well, actually, I think what they really need to do is absolutely make sure that Fitz is gone.
Yeah, you're right.
He can't be on the team next year.
As it pertains to this, You're right. Unless you want Fitz to be the dude. If Fitz is going to be there, you got to start him again. That's what it is. You know
or
what
if
I mean?
Or if you draft somebody like Lance, who's unpolished.
That's right.
Who wouldn't expect to start.
But you just did that, right?
Tua was expected to play if he was healthy.
But you know what I mean. But it's still the same thing. It's like, all right, we just tried this with Tua. It didn't work. So we ended up having to play Fitz. So let's keep Fitz and move Tua and bring in someone else. We're going to do the same thing over again. It's like insanity. So the second thing you got to do after getting rid of Fitz, no disrespect to Fitz, is find a great offensive coordinator. And there's a handful of them out there. I know that the guy from Clemson, Tony Elliott, he's getting a lot of looks right now. Pep Hamilton, he's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, the names are there. They need to modernize what they were trying to do offensively, especially with a quarterback like Tua, or really any of these guys that come out of college anymore.
All right, good stuff. You want to get us on Twitter, we'd love to see what you guys think about this. What should Miami do? Jump in and drop us a tweet at Tiki and Tierney. Give us a follow, obviously, as well. Let's get Axe Update coming up. We'll get into inbounds, out of bounds. Good snow, which makes fun viewing in terms of what's going to go down this weekend, potentially in Buffalo with the Bills and the Ravens. But what would it do to interrupt Lamar Jackson's flow? Could it completely sabotage it, or could it actually be advantageous to the Ravens? We'll get into that coming up. Here's Axe Update right now. Kyrie Irving reportedly steamed at the organization, Nets management. And that's, this story, until he shows up and until he speaks, it's a story. Sean Mark spoke earlier today, and he did say some interesting things. We'll play it for you. We'll get into the discussion. Also, big perk, Kendrick Perkins. Let's face it, the GOAT stuff is just tiring. It's old. It's boring. It's stale, but Perk threw a little something in the hopper today on social media that we got to weave in. And as is coming from a guy who has staunchly said, no matter what LeBron does, Michael Jordan's going to always remain the GOAT. I'm not saying I'm prepared to flip, but I am saying I'm prepared to at least look at what Perk said and incorporate and have a conversation. So one of the many things we'll get into as we get a little deeper into the show. But Tickets, right now it's time for Inbounds, Out of Bounds. You ready to go?
Yep, let's do
see
it.
What we got. Let's go, buddy.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now. Tiki and Tierney.
Let's talk football. Why not? Lamar Jackson finally got his first playoff win after losing his first two attempts. He's going to take on the Buffalo Bills coming up this weekend, the Ravens in Buffalo for the divisional round. So weather reports up there in western New York indicate that snow could be in the forecast, and Lamar admitted he doesn't have a whole lot of experience with snow.
How much experience do you have playing in the snow? And
zero.
You've never got it.
Zero experience. I never got to play in the snow, except my first time seeing snow in Louisville. But we had a snowball fight, so that was totally different from playing in it. But, yeah, that definitely would be my first time playing football in the snow Saturday. If it does, hopefully it don't.
Okay, so the Ravens' run-heavy offense will be at more of a disadvantage in the snow than the Bills and Josh Allen's passing attack.
I'm going to say out of bounds, just from a general perspective. Running the football is much easier than having to worry about routes and timing, and not to mention the obstructive nature of snow as opposed to rain falling in front of your face as a pass catcher. So I'm going to say out of bounds, and I think that even though it is a slippery field and Lamar's running style is more slashing and, you know, requires him to cut pretty heavily, I think that their equipment managers, especially after the couple of situations earlier this year where Lamar had trouble keeping his feet, they'll have this. This will be the priority number one for this run game. So I'm going to say out of bounds.
I'm going to say out of bounds as well, just to give you, an up to the second weather report here for Buffalo on the weekend. 35 degrees-ish as a high, which means it's obviously going to dip below that when the sun goes in or at night. 45-ish percent chance of precipitation. The winds are going to be a big deal, 16 to 17 miles an hour.
That's probably more important than the snow.
That's where I was going. That would favor, not that Lamar has a weak arm, but Josh Allen's got a rifle. So if you've got to cut through that wind, obviously Allen more equipped to do that. I'm going to say out of bounds here, though, because let's say even if it's a combination of snow and rain, if it's sleet, whatever it is. I mean, just think about when you played in the street growing up. Like, if you, even if you slow, but if you know where you're going and your opponent obviously does not, you know, your ability to create leverage and gain a little separation, it's highly advantageous on a slippery surface rather than the defender.
That's right.
So that's one thing, part of the reason why I say out of bounds. And the other thing, too, he has a lot of off-script plays. And when you have, if he's running around for 5 seconds outside of the pocket going left to right, and you've got guys on the third level, cornerbacks and safeties, trying to keep up with receivers and tight ends down the field for Baltimore, you could slip.
Yeah.
And if that happens, you got a wide open shot. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I'm with you. Out of bounds. I'm not too worried about it.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Teague. The Steelers, one and done in the postseason, finishing 25th in the NFL total offense this year. Dead last in rushing yards, averaging just 84 yards a game. And we've chronicled this a lot. The disparity in you know, pass-to-run ratio was ridiculous. Earlier this week, Mike Tomlin said big changes need to be made.
Obviously didn't anticipate being here in this position. Disappointed. Understand that we better make some changes in terms of the things that we do. We better look at every aspect of it, schematics, personnel, approach to business. You know, I'm not going to maintain status quo and hope that the outcome changes. That's, you know, that's the definition of insanity.
Okay. So today the team announced that they will not retain their offensive coordinator, so they're in the market for that. Things are changing, so what you heard Tomlin say at the podium was a foreshadow to their actions, which went down today. Unbalanced and poor play calling was the main reason for the Steelers' offensive woes, in or out?
I'm going to say in bounds, and I don't want to put it all on Randy Fickner, who was Ben Roethlisberger's longtime quarterback coach. I think he'd been there since 2011. The last 3 years he took over as offensive coordinator. In 2018, they had a top 10 offense. They were actually really explosive and dynamic. Last year, mainly because of injury to Big Ben, they went to 30th or 31st, something like that. They were bottom of the league, and now they're back at the bottom of the league again. I understand that their run game was anemic. Their offensive line's gotten a little bit older. James Conner, I like his story. I don't necessarily love him. He's not dynamic and explosive. But you still got to stick to it. You even especially when you're not getting blown out in these games. Last week is different because they were down 28-0. But for most of the season, it's not like they were, you know, getting blown away by other teams and they had to throw the ball 70 times this game.
Yeah.
I'm being a little bit exaggerated there. But still.
No, a couple of times it was 59, so it's not an exaggeration, actually.
You still got to find a way to, even if you're getting nothing, you still got to do it. And the discrepancy was bad.
Yeah, I totally agree. To me, this is a really easy one. And, you know, so I won't be redundant here. I'll throw this in because everything you just said I agree with. Also, when your defense is compromised, and listen, the defense, the shell of their defense was still obviously good.
Yeah.
You know, Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and others. But when they lost, you know, Dupree, and when they lost Devin Bush.
Yep.
I mean, that's even more reason to kind of not bleed the clock. I'm not saying like you take this completely conservative approach.
Yeah, but why not, BT? Shorten the game. Seriously.
Shorten the game. But I don't mean like it's where it's like, you know, you show up and it's a team. Like, you don't think you can win, so you just.
Yeah.
You know, not like that. But, I mean, yeah, there's an element of latching on to time of possession and trying to use that to your advantage for sure, which they never did. That's a big problem there, and this one was very easy. They've got to find more balance. Hey, I don't care if you throw 103 miles per hour. Every once in a while, you got to mix in the changeup.
Yeah.
You got to throw a shoulder. I don't care if you throw the slider in the dirt. You got to let the other team know that you have it. So this was easy. I'm with you.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, T. The NBA has seen multiple games postponed due to rising cases of COVID around the league, as we know, including three last night. Now the league's decided to tighten things up a bit in terms of the protocols here, especially for teams on the road. They've got two new rule changes here. First, players will not be allowed to leave their hotel other than for team activities. Mm-hmm. And second, no outside guests will be allowed to enter the hotel rooms, which, if you're young and you're single, is miserable. Many players have expressed frustration, including Thunder guard George Hill.
I mean, I'm a grown man, so I'm going to do what I want to do. If I want to go see my family, I'm going to go see my family. They can't tell me I have to stay in a room 24-7. If it's that serious, then maybe we shouldn't be playing. But, you know, it's life. No one's going to be able to just cancel their whole life for this game, and that's how I think about it.
Okay, so the question is this here, Teek. The NBA's new rules prohibiting players from leaving their rooms is too excessive, in or out?
Excessive is too strong of a word, so if I read literally, I'm going to say no. Mm-hmm. I think that so I'm going to say out of bounds here. But George Hill's got a point. I mean, you got to be smart. You got to be careful. And I think they're trying to guard against the extremes, like what we were alluding to, PT, finding some girl at a bar and bringing her back to your hotel room.
Yeah.
That's what they're guarding against, the extremes, or going to a party when you're in Denver at some club, you know what I mean? Like, they're trying to guard against that.
Yeah.
But there are perfectly safe and, I don't know, I think needed alternatives for these players. And so if they're going to be hardlined, I'd say out of bounds. But if they're kind of letting it go as they see fit, be smart about it, that's different. So I'm going to say it's too excessive. I'm going to say inbounds.
I'm going to say out of bounds. It's not too excessive. I think it's necessary. You know, I don't know how else you can forge through and have a season. And I understand fundamentally what George Hill is saying.
Was George's point, right? If we got to do this, then why are we having a season?
Well, why do we have a bubble last year?
I mean, because they needed to finish the season.
Because we're in a pandemic, and it's a unique circumstance that's swallowing up the entire country. We've all altered our lifestyle. I mean, listen, nobody's keeping George Hill there against his own volition. I mean, George Hill has the option of leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, so if George Hill disagrees with this, and again, fundamentally, as a grown man, as an adult, I understand why there would be some kickback here. I do, fundamentally speaking, but it's not like there's not an option. The option is go home. I mean, go home and forfeit what remains on your contract, and that's it. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. Nobody's forcing you to do it. But if you want to have a season, you're going to have rigid protocols, and they're going to have to be enforced, because without enforcement, it's a waste of time. So I get it, but I disagree with George. The option is to quit or to leave and come back next season or adhere to the new protocols. That's it.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Teeke and Tierney.
Because you got to understand, like, you know, George Hill, he's in his 30s. He's got a family, and I get it. We both have families, understood. But he's coming at it from a bit of a different place. You know, the 23-year-old young man who's got money in his pocket for the first time and fame for the first time and no responsibilities at home, no kids, he's doing what we'd be doing. Let's keep it real. He'd be going out and he'd try to have a little fun. I wouldn't blame him. But if you don't have one universally well-enforced rule, it's going to crumble. So there you go. Kyrie is ticked. Get to that coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.